position number 14238, reel 3.
Mr. Gower, reel 3.
It was advocated at the time that people over the age of 33 would be sent out of submarines. They were going to be considered as too old for submarines. Our next incident happened when we came out of Dundee. There was we was going past the convoy, and the crew members were waving to us as we went past. Aircraft came overhead. It was a Blenheim. The pilot waved to our navigating officer, and he returned the wave. He came a bit closer, and he waved again. Our navigator waved back to him. He came closer again and waved, and our navigator said, "What's the matter with this bloody fool?" And the Blenheim banked. And as the Blenheim banked, it was noticed that he had British markings underneath and a swastika on top. Dive, dive, dive. We dived. Smokey and I, we finished up in the control room. Arms and legs entwined. I ran for my diving station. And as I passed the wardroom, Darby Allen said to me, "Don't worry, Alf," he said, "it's only a trim dive." I said, "Is it? Will you listen to this bastard?" And the bomb fell just off the starboard bow. The hinges of the hatches sprung and water poured in until the hatches sprung back again. And as I said, what a wonderful way to spend a sunny day. We came out of that alright, but these incidents happened. It must be remembered, you see, that the Navy had a bit of a reputation, and we could be at sea ages before we saw a ship, because the German ships also were frightened to come out because of the Navy's reputation. They knew the submarines were outside the harbours, and they just admitted to come out. We could go weeks, months before anything happened. And it was a waiting game all the time. I can remember on another occasion when we waited to catch Bismarck. Now, it's easy to upset the level of a submarine. So what we did, we were at stations for 8 hours one particular day, and a bucket was passed from rating to rating so that we could urinate and not upset the trim of the boat. But as I say, these things, they went on, and Cuba depth charge, yeah, but after a while, one got used to depth charges, and of course the ones that were the devils to cope with were the close ones, and the old boats used to rattle, and later on my worst depth charging, it really made me pray, and it's the first time that I'd ever prayed. I left the sea wolf because of food poisoning. And when I came back to Blockhouse, I was sent to the submarine Sea Nymph. The Sea Wolf went on to Philadelphia, and from Philadelphia it went to Canada, where she was broken up in about 1948. On the Sea Nymph, we had a crew had never been to sea in submarines before. Gone were the days when we used to signal to one another by hand. These young lads, they didn't realise that one could hear a spanner drop about 10 miles away, or a shoe could be heard banging into a piece of iron, could be heard a couple of miles away. It's all a question of noise and what you did to contain it. When it came to detection, what we used to do on the Sea Nymph was the same as what we used to do on the other aircraft, S-boats. But with the old S-boats, out of 12 of us, only 3 survived. But the only thing about the Sea Nymph was that she had a torpedo in the stern, so she had 13 tin fish as opposed to 12 on the Sea Wolf. Up again we were up in Norway, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, freezing.
This is 42-43, because you joined the ship in September 42.
Yeah. And as I say, the Samaritan's life was a waiting game. If you saw a flight of wild ducks, geese, you would immediately dive, because they looked like aircraft in formation. If a whale spurted, you would dive, because you see, you thought that was it was nerves all the time, and the aircraft could be on you. There was quite a few ships sunk by our own aircraft, and we used to dive no matter what nationality the aircraft was. We was more fearful of our own than we was of the enemy.
Were you patrolling in the same area with the sea nymph as you were with the sea wolf?
Yes, it was all jolly cold. But the sea nymph was an unlucky boat. I always call it as an unlucky boat because we never sunk any ships in her. We did do the X-craft. We towed X-8 in particular up to the Tirpitz.
What do you remember about that?
I always think that it was such a disappointing, and nothing was really attained by it. None of the aircraft ever came back. Our particular one, the X-8, she was sunk before we got there, because she'd had a bit of trouble and she couldn't maintain a surface run. We waited outside still, even though we did have a submarine, because if there was a surplus of towing submarines, the X-craft could have hooked onto any one of us, and we could have towed them back. But not one X-craft returned from that incident, action, whatever you will. But the thing that most stood out in my mind, it was a rough sea. It was a very, very rough sea. An old Sid Tout, he was a 17 stoner. He was picked up by a wave and he was thrown overboard.
This was when you took the X-8 up?
No, this was just after that action. See, I can only give you divers' dates. These things, you know, they wouldn't be anywhere. Although that particular occasion was in the logbook, and I put it down as such in my book. But we turned round gingerly because of the seas, and we picked old Sid up. We threw him a rope. He grabbed hold of it. At the time, he was wearing an Ursula suit. Now, an Ursula suit is a suit that was made by barbers for the barber coach, remember? But it was designed by the captain of the Ursula. That's why they called it the Ursula suit. And it kept Sid afloat. And when we threw this rope to him, he grabbed it. But he was frozen. He was L-shaped. We got him into the boat. And as we pushed, we cut the rope away, both sides of his fist, top and bottom of his fist. And as we pushed Sid's legs down, his head come up. As we pushed his head down, his legs come up. The coxswain gave him some rum, and he gradually thawed down, or thawed out, and he never would go up on the bridge again. The next one was Jock Kerr. By this time, we were tying ourselves to the periscope standards of the bridge as the waves came over. You know, we used to hold on tight. Now, you might think, well, why didn't you submerge? But you can't do, for the simple reason the batteries have to be topped up. You see? And of course, what used to happen too, when the big wave came over, it would push the hatchet down. And of course, work it on diesels, it would suck all the air out of the boat. You see? Until we used to, as fast as we could, open up the hatch again. And old Jock went over, but as he was tied to this with this rope, and we pulled him back in again, and he had concussion on the brain, and we nursed him back after about 3 or 4 days. It wasn't too bad, and then another leading seaman. He was washed over by one wave and brought back by another wave. They were terrific seas. I can remember on one occasion looking over the side and keeping in the same position. When the boat rolled, I was looking at the sky. So therefore it was going over around somewhere around about 180 degrees. If I was looking at the sea one moment and the sky is the next, it's 180 degrees. And they were terrifying moments. What they don't say in these books is that you lived in filth. You were always soaking wet. Because you couldn't get your clothes dry. And of course, you stunk. You could never wash the decks of a submarine in water because of the tuberculosis problem. So you wash the decks in shale oil. And of course with shale oil, you see, it permeated your clothing. Now my wife, at times, she was reluctant to walk along with me because of the smell from my clothing. And at the same time, because you could not wash yourself properly, scabies. You were full of scabies. It was nothing to see. Well, nearly everybody in the boat was always scratching their airy parts because of scabies. I can remember on occasions. Going back, say, to the Sea Wolf, when we had 10 gallons of water to last 16 men for a whole day to make tea, to get food prepared in, to have a bath, wash up your crockery. Now, with crockery, if we wanted a cup, you used to get a fingerful of spit and clean your cup with. That's how water was so tight. There was no such thing as freezers in those days and things like this, you see. We used to take aboard about 450 pounds of bread, 250 pounds of meat. And that used to be stowed in the seamen's places where they bedded down. The bread after 10 days used to go white and furry. And we used to cut the outside, toast the inside to hide the smell. Now with the meat, what we used to have to do is to normally is to apply to go to the heads, which is of course the toilets. You go ring up the control room and ask for permission to go to the control, go to the heads, and of course you receive permission. So, but what they did, the officer, he adjusted the weight in the tanks, because a person walking from forward to aft, there's a big weight adjustment. Right now, when he gets there, he does what he has to do, and then he asks for permission to blow it. Now, of course, in submarine, you see, if you're down a certain depth, say you're at 30 feet periscope depth, to blow your toilet out to sea, you'd put 30 pounds pressure to the square inch. And the deeper, of course, you went down, you'd have to apply more pressure. So you phone up the control room again and ask for permission to blow. And the officer would look through the periscopes, and he would look round to see if there was any ships in the vicinity, and then give him permission to blow. And of course you blew. Because now, if there was any ships in the vicinity and they saw excreta coming to the surface, they immediately knew that you were down below. With the urination, it wasn't too much of a problem, because the seamen made the bulk of the crew. And what they used to do, instead of putting the officer in the control room for too much inconvenience, they used to urinate in the torpedo storage place where the meat used to be stored. Consequently, after 5 days, the meat gets green. Of course, it has to be thrown over the side anyway. So there were...
Sounds no wonder that you got food poisoning then.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how the game used to be. Now, with the tins of food, what you would do is to tear the labels off, put them in a separate bag, and that had to be taken back to base to be dispensed with when we got back. But for the tins, we used to puncture them so many times that when we threw them over the side, they would sink. Now, as regards to breathing, we used to, after about 14, 15 hours dived, it all depends where you were, you see, what time of the year it was, you would put down protosorb in trays, and you would make little mounds in the tray so that there's a bigger spread of freshness to come out of it. If it was only one mound, you wouldn't get the capacity rising off the powder, do you know what I mean?
This is some kind of chemical.
Yeah, a protosorb. Very, very similar to the stuff that they put in the walls for
insulation.
Very similar to that. It looked. There must be other compounds, but there you are. And I've seen people bleeding from the nose after too long dives. And terrific, you get terrific headaches. In the north, you'll be, say, dive for about, 19 hours. Don't forget, there's no system where you can get fresh air from or any cylinders. You had to, when you went down in a boat, that air in the boat was all you had to breathe all day long. Consequently, you got these headaches. See? And I'll tell you how they can build up. On the Sturgeon, just before I went to it to do my training patrol, and I told my skipper about this, and he was quite surprised to hear it too. The signalman used to go up before the captain. And there was a 17-stone signalman. And the pressure caught hold of him. And he went out to sea, and they never found him. Wherever he went to, nobody knows. The pressure just took him out. That's how terrifically pressure builds up. Your ears go click. You get to the control room and you, oh, that fresh air does smell beautiful. So, you know. But this is how it used to be. And as I say, it was really a hard life. And I've had people say to me, Elf, does this affect you at all? So I said, no. I said, I'm quite happy with it. So they just said to me, well, I'll tell you what. When I come and I put my feet on terra firma, he said, I'll breathe a sigh of relief.
Can I ask you about the German film Das Boot?
Yes.
If you saw it and if you thought it was an accurate depiction of what life was like in a submarine in the war?
My skipper and I laughed about that. Because we said, where did all that wood come from to shore up the... we did really laugh about that, him and I. It seemed a true... things that actually went on, but for that piece about where all that wood came for shoring up, that ridiculed the film. And incidentally, this